This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems too. Like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hi, it's me, Mike. I run the Sonar Podcast Network, the very one you're listening to right now. I love podcasting and I love the Canadian podcast community. And if you're a podcaster, work in podcasting, or just someone who loves podcasts, you're going to want to listen up. I'm proud to announce that I've been working very hard behind the scenes on an incredible podcasting event in Toronto on June 6th, the Soundwave Summit 2024. And as a Sonar listener, you get 15% off on all tickets with the code SONAR15. An awesome group of podcast companies and creators have banded together to create a space for podcasters and fans to build community, share knowledge, and celebrate indie productions. There will be a ton of informative sessions all day, including talks from Canada Land, Vocal Fry, Black Canadian Creators, Lead Podcasting, and of course, from us, the Sonar Network. In the evening, there will be a showcase of live podcast recordings from Blacklantic, Squirrel Talk, and the Women of Ill Repute. And it's all emceed by the amazingly talented and Survivor-winningest host of Happy to See Me podcast, Erica Kostupinen. Join us for insightful workshops on podcasting, networking with industry pros, drinks, and overall amazing opportunities to meet and collaborate with like-minded podcast lovers. Come for the sessions in the day, the live podcast showcase at night, or better yet, come for the whole thing. Tickets are going fast, so get them now at thesoundwavesummit.com. And don't forget to use the code SONAR15 for 15% off all tickets. That's SONAR15. See you there.
Real Legitimate Apparitions is told one episode after another, but exists all at once. Headphones recommended. Episode 5 starts now.
The following was recorded on November 25th and 26th. 2015.
Wait.
And now they seemed really worried, as if something was going to grab them out of the darkness of this lighthouse.
What? I've never seen anything beyond this point.
Hey, it's okay. We'll figure it out together.
I feel like there's a lot of things I have to tell you. Let's go.
Neff went to the shut red door, turned the handle, and tried to push it open. But it wouldn't budge. They knocked on the door.
Hello? Murphy? We're ready to come out.
And then a voice came from the other side of the door.
Murphy can't open the door right now, Neff.
Tom, open the door.
I'm sorry, Dylan. I can't let you or Neff out.
Why not?
I'm waiting for reinforcements.
Why?
Because thanks to you, Dylan, I found exactly who I've been looking for.
Neff turned to me and a kind of sad realization crossed their face.
Tom, what are you talking about?
Who is Tom?
Let us out!
I can't do that right now, Dil.
What's this about? Let's talk.
Oh, we'll talk, Dylan. We're gonna finally talk to each other honestly.
Then let us out!
Not when it's two against one.
Where's Murphy?
He's here. He's just out of it. Had a few too many gummy bears.
Tom, come on, I'm your boss!
Haunt Force isn't real, Dylan. You know that.
Who is he?
He's my co-worker.
Obviously he's not who you think he is.
I don't get it.
Dylan, there are people out there who know exactly what it is we can do, and they want to find us and stop us. And if this Tom guy is one of those people, then you have brought a psychopath, and probably an abductor, and maybe a murderer with you today.
No, Tom isn't one
of those. Tom is whatever he wants you to think he is. How did you meet him?
He called me when I posted a job.
He called you? And you hired him?
Yes!
Who the fuck would want to work for a ghost-catching business? Dylan, he knows who your dad is. He must.
This was getting more and more overwhelming. I hammered the door with my fist.
Tom! Let us out right now! Tom!
If he's waiting for the others, they will come and take us away.
Why?
Because they think we shouldn't have movements. I don't know, these people are insane.
But I know Tom.
Then why is he doing
this? Tom! Let us out!
Dylan, you have to have a movement.
What?
We can get out of here, but you have to do it.
How?
By looking ahead and doing what you'll do.
How is that possible?
Have a movement and see your future, and your future will tell us how we get out.
I can't. That's... Why can't you?
Because, Dylan, I don't know what's gonna happen to me. Never let these people take you alive, okay? They will destroy you and use you to get to the rest of us.
That doesn't answer my question.
If you have a movement and aim forward to a future in which you don't exist, then you die. I haven't seen anything beyond this, so I don't know that I'll make it.
Yeah, but exactly. You don't know.
But you have seen your future. You know that you live longer than this.
How?
You're fucking killing me, man. Because you've seen your future at Mrs. Truco's place. You've seen it at Misha's place.
How do you know that?
Because I sent you there. I told them to call you.
You did?
I have been trying to get you to understand who you are for years, Dylan. As soon as I finished the movement, years ago, to see you find that paper under that floorboard, I had to get you, force you into this space and into your own movement for your dad. He saved my life.
So now you want me to have a movement upwards or whatever in case I might tell us how to get out of here?
Yes.
This seemed totally insane. If Neff was right, and Thomas had used me to get to them, and there were people on their way here to abduct us both, then definitely it wasn't the best time to be going into a movement or whatever, and then probably also a seizure. But at the same time, if I believed everything Neff had told me so far, why would I stop now? But on the other hand, what if I didn't believe Neff, and all this crap was all bullshit, and there wasn't even such a thing as a movement and fucking time travel, and nothing in the world was different than I thought it was yesterday? But there was a whole slew of problems with that. One was, for example, that Thomas Bracknell was holding us inside this fucking lighthouse, and why would he be doing that other than for the reasons that Neff was telling me?
Dylan, say your words.
Words?
The Latin.
The Latin, yeah.
Hold tight, guys.
Come on.
This will be over soon.
Yeah.
Cerberus, curator of Silenti, Sinophas Madis, Vinir Contra Mihi.
But I knew it wouldn't work.
Phasmatis, Radix, Quad, Causa, Vita.
Because while my mind was definitely firing on all cylinders,
Modo, Adios, Afragium,
I couldn't focus.
Mihi, in Mus, Nigotium.
My mind kept flying from one image to the next.
Gratius, Ago, Vos, Cerberus.
People running across Toronto Island to help Tom capture us.
Rotabelli, Silenti, et Transio.
Neff, trying for years to get me to come to this lighthouse.
Gratius, Ago, Vos, Phasmatis.
Tom, working alongside me. Only to find Neff.
Pro Yunctio Mihi in Muse.
My dad, for the first time in decades, looking into my eyes.
I can't! It's not working!
Dylan, please.
Hi! Thanks for coming!
I can't!
You're in here.
Okay? I can't do this!
You have to!
No, I don't have to do anything! You've been messing with me for too long! Everything's gotten worse and worse and worse!
So it was your fault all along.
What?
Oh, that's funny. I worked for so long to help you.
There's two of them in there?
And you're the one who ends it all for me.
Dylan and Nathan's friend, Neff.
No!
I'm sorry.
He knows?
Maybe there's another way.
Yeah.
I thought you might be a fraction as awesome as your dad.
Let's go.
Wait, Neff!
I hope Nathan's right.
I'll go for Dylan.
And I'll be seeing you again soon.
What are you doing?
Aiming up.
Lesson 8. The Others. You and I, and those of us who have these experiences, aren't the only ones who know about temporal superposition and movements. The others understand that if we wanted to, we could form the world that we live in. They murder us. They follow us. They take us. Never, and I mean never, let them take you alive.
The little red door that had shut us in swung open. The moonlight cascaded into the dark space. Three flashlights turned on and blinded me. I held a hand up in front of my face to block the light that burned my eyes. The people holding the flashlights stepped into the room, and then all three beams converged onto Neff standing in the center of the tall room. Neff looked at me,
their face filled with sadness and rage and pride and peace, and said,
"Close every circle."
And then Neff closed their eyes, relaxed their shoulders, tilted their head back. People experience their seizures in different ways. I smell metal, feel hot, become confused. I wondered what sensation Neff was feeling as their entire body began to tense up. Arms, hands, shoulders, legs, back. Like they had been turned to stone. And Neff crashed to the ground like a young tree cut down at the base and began to seize. Their muscles violently contracting, jolting their body in different directions.
Save them!
Thomas's voice bounced off the hundreds of rocks that made up the 80-foot-high walls. The two new men stepped forward towards Neff and knelt down beside their seasoned body. I tore my eyes away from what I had done and looked through my fingers towards the flashlight held by Tom.
Tom, what's happening?
Don't worry, Dylan. Everything is gonna be fine. We have a safe place to take you.
Take me?
It's gonna be okay.
What's going on?
Just calm down.
I looked back at Neff lying on the ground. My eyes were beginning to adjust. The two men had rolled them onto their side. Neff had stopped convulsing. Their body was now still.
Is Neff okay?
Hey, Dylan, calm down.
Stay away from me.
I think Neff was sending clients to Haunt Force.
I thought you said Haunt Force wasn't real.
Dylan, we got a place where you can figure out everything on your own time.
Neff is dead.
Fuck!
The two men stood up, leaving the body on the ground, and turned towards me. One of them shone their light at me. The other towards Thomas, illuminating his face.
Dylan, hey, it's been a wild night. You've been through a lot. Let's go and get you cleaned up, okay?
No.
Look, it's okay. We have a place where you can make sense of all the...
I just want to go home.
Silence filled the room. The three men stood facing me. I could see Neff's unmoving body behind them. I knew they wouldn't take me home.
We got somewhere better.
I saw the way he was looking at me. I'd seen that look before. First, when we were at Mrs. Truco's.
Thank you. Thank you.
I looked to Thomas. He was smiling, but his eyes told a different story. He looked confused, serious, nervous.
And then, in Misha's bathroom, when I was lying in the bathtub, looking up at Rachel and Misha and Desmond, Tom was glaring at me from the doorway. And then, I thought back to when Tom had asked that rando question to Raymond in the little apartment.
What do you know about tempo superposition?
Tempo... what?
I have epilepsy too. So did your dad. And we saw things. We experienced temporal superposition.
And I realized that from the beginning, Thomas had been manipulating me. Using me.
Come with us now, and it'll be easier for everyone.
In fact, he hated me. As I looked back at Thomas, and his fake smile and his hate-filled eyes, I began to smell metal. Blood. I began to get hot. I closed my eyes.
Don't let him go!
For the second time tonight, I heard the music. I opened my eyes and the world pulsed in and out. There was both three people in front of me and no one at all. It was both the dead of night and day. The two men outstretched their hands to grab me. My eyes flipped towards Tom, whose face was now filled with fear. My right foot took a step back and I spun quickly and smoothly away from the men. My left hand extended towards a rock in the wall and clasped it. It happened to be loose. It also happened to be both covered in some kind of dark coating and not. I withdrew it from the wall and continued my spin all the way around. One of the men crashed into my abdomen with all of his weight, but before I had even registered the impact, I had brought the rock down on top of the man's head. As I hit the wooden floorboards, the weight of the man's unconscious body landed on top of me. I tossed the rock into the air with my left hand and caught it with my right, which was a good thing because I realized that as I did so, the other man had lunged for where the rock had just been. As soon as he realized the rock had switched hands, he pinned my left hand down with his right. I had expected my right hand to swing the rock down on his head, but it didn't. It stayed motionless, holding the rock tightly, which was a good thing because the man had swung his left arm up to defend the rock hit that never came. Then I tossed the rock in the air with my right hand over the man's head, which was a good thing because he lunged with both hands for my right hand, where the rock had just been. And as soon as my left hand caught the rock, it drove it into the side of the man's head, and I watched as the rock connected with the man's temple, where it came at a painful stop and swung through the empty air. The man collapsed on top of me. My arms pushed off the two men who lay on top of me. I stood up and looked towards the space, which had both Tom pointing his flashlight at me and nothing at all.
Dylan! See? You didn't have to do that! Come with me, and we can protect you from yourself!
I paused and then said,
"Get out of here! Run away, Tom! I don't want to see you around here again, and if I do, I'll kill you."
My head turned to see one of the men stirring. My legs ran towards him and my arm brought down the rock and missed his head. I tried again and missed again. What was going on? On the third try, I found his head and brought down the rock again and again. My body crawled to the other man and dropped the rock into his skull once, twice, three times. I felt the hot blood on my hands and face.
Look at what you're becoming. Call me. You know my number.
And he turned around, walked out of the door, and closed it behind him. As soon as he disappeared, I collapsed and seized the way Neff had moments ago, and joined the other three bodies in the dark on the floor of the lighthouse.
Lesson 6. Who we are. Some definitions before we move forward. Temporal superposition is a term I coined a few years back. It seems simple enough. Superposition comes from quantum mechanics, when a particle is said to not be limited to one spatial position before it's measured, but is occupying an array of positions at the same time. A movement is a term that I did not coin. I've seen it again and again in my research, at times convincingly referring to a temporally superpositioned seizure. Figures throughout history like Van Gogh, Beethoven, Joan of Arc, Leonardo da Vinci, Napoleon, all had epilepsy and might have experienced temporal superposition. Throughout writing surrounding these figures is the term movement. And it feels right. To me, my movements do really feel like a part of me has moved or traveled. A circle is a form of reality that is created by a movement. It's not very scientific, it just describes what is created when you discover another event in your lifeline. Imagine a circle in space-time that intersects your lifeline at two moments, one where the event occurs naturally in real time, and the other when you have the movement that links the two events. Aiming is a feeling. As we head into a movement, two possible paths present themselves to us, forwards or backwards. I've discovered over many movements that we have the capability to, at times, push ourselves in one direction or another. We do this by aiming, which is a difficult skill to acquire.
I don't know what's true or not. I don't know if anyone knows what's true or not? And then if nobody knows what's true, then what's even the point? Should we try and struggle towards something that we will never get to, that our minds could never understand? I feel like truth is like memory. Like when you remember something, you can never truly picture it completely. You can see parts of it, little shimmers. And you can't even be sure that those bits you can see were ever really there. And then you realize, if you're thinking about a more distant memory, that it's almost as if you're picturing an event that someone else experienced. Like, as if you're imagining a story someone told you. This is different from, like, factual memory. Like, the fact that you were somewhere at some time. Or like, the address you had growing up. Or, say, your 15th birthday, or 20th, or 30th, I don't know how old you are. One you can remember. You might know that it happened. You know maybe what you did, but can you picture it? And when you try to picture it, are you really using your memory, or are you using your imagination? Because imagination is not memory. Imagination is good, sure. It helps you do things differently. Maybe live in a different way. Think of something new. But it's not memory. I think what I'm trying to say is that the relationship between imagination and memory is kind of similar to the relationship between imagination and truth. We can't really reach the truth. We can't really understand the truth. So we have to fake it. Imagine it. So then, I guess, everyone can believe in whatever they want, if it doesn't hurt those around them. Because whatever truth anyone comes up with is more of a decision on a certain imagined truth than anything like real truth anyway. What if the truth you decide to believe in directly affects every aspect of your life and every action you make? Then maybe you can't just believe whatever. Neff had given me an answer. A possible answer as to what the fuck was going on in my head. And not even a full answer. Not even complete. Just kind of a suggestion, along with a note from under a floorboard. But was this answer the truth? It was definitely 100% impossible for me to know. But it was also definitely 100% better than having no answer. Or was it? Is it better to believe a false truth and act accordingly? Or is it better to do nothing in case it might be wrong? Or did none of that matter? Is it best to actually act as if there is no truth and just do what makes you happy? Neff was dead. I checked. I climbed the long circular staircase to the top floor of the lighthouse. There wasn't much of a railing on the stairs, just a rope that was threaded through metal posts every few feet. It was higher than I had thought. On the top floor, a short ladder led to a hatch door, which I pushed open. I climbed through the hatchway, out into the night air, and onto the cold metal walkway which surrounded the large glass cage. There was no light inside. On one side, to the north, the city of Toronto presented itself to me. Brilliant, shining, made up of millions of little lights. To my other side, the moon, perfectly round, bright white. The lake beneath it shimmered. The light from the moon cascaded over every surface. The trees beneath the lighthouse, the large patches of field on the island, my hands. And also out here, directly above me, were the stars. Little pinpricks, flickering. Little suggestions of great, billowing, explosive balls of heat billions of miles away. I took out the two notes I had received today. One that Neff had given me, outlining what I was thinking at the time, and the little folded note that I had found under the floorboard of the lighthouse that apparently my dad had put there decades ago, that I had seen him put there twice. It was written in the same unclear handwriting as the note I had found in my mailbox. Dylan, if you have come this far in the journey, then you have been through some confusing experiences. I am sorry. Space is a floor on which we all walk. The way we experience our lives is mysterious and is of great concern. I spent my life trying to discover, but once you shed your previous conceptions and establish a system to follow, you will find at least some clarity. I hope you find a clarity in an easier way, a less painful way than I did. Clarity is in a lockbox. Let me help you find the key. There is a reason for everything, Dylan. A reason to keep going. To never give up. During movements, we conquer the mental trap of time. The true goal is to conquer the mental trap of space. Every movement creates a circle. Close every circle. If we succeed, we will see each other again, wherever our paths have crossed, forever. I love you,
and I'm so sorry, Dad. I looked at the white moon and the twinkling stars and the glowing city, and it struck me how wild it was that a group of little humans with no ability to recognize any truth had somehow banded together and built a city. A city that shone its own light back into the universe to rival the moon and the stars. And I knew it didn't matter what truth I chose to believe in. It was the decision to choose a truth that mattered. And to act on it. So I buried the bodies. I found Murphy collapsed against a tree on the outskirts of the clearing. He had his large backpack strapped to him. Inside was the wrench he had used to open the lighthouse door, some City of Toronto safety markers, a toolkit, and a small shovel. I dragged the bodies of Neff and Tom's two men out of the lighthouse, across the clearing and into the brush. Murphy, too. I buried them as deep as I could, which wasn't very much. There was a network of tree roots a foot or two down. I knew they would be found eventually. I just had to buy myself time. I unfolded my dad's note again. During movements, we conquer the mental trap of time. Every movement creates a circle. Close every circle. And I thought back to what Neff had said.
Dylan, you have to have a movement.
What?
We can get out of here, but you have to do it.
How?
By looking ahead and doing what you'll do.
How is that possible?
Have a movement and see your future, and your future will tell us how we get out.
I can't. That's...
Close every circle.
I went back into the lighthouse and found the rock I had used on the two men. Their dark blood was caked on it. I tossed it up in the air with one hand and caught it with the other. It was heavy, unbalanced. My grip felt clumsy. I tried to remember the movements of the men as they lunged at me. I spun, grabbed the rock, and then he tackled me. And then I hit him on the head. It had all happened too fast. I tried to quickly spin on the spot and then toss the rock, and I practically fell over. I didn't want to practice in the space where I had been attacked. In case, I don't know, I'd mess it up for my past self. So I took the rock outside into the clearing. The hue of the night sky was beginning to shift from black to purple. Spin. Rock out of wall. Spin back. Tackle comes. Rock to one head. Fall. Toss the rock from left to right, then right to left, then rock to the other head. Again. Spin. Rock. Spin. Tackle. Head. Fall. Toss right. Toss left. Head. Spin. Rock. Spin. Tackle. Head. Fall. Toss right. Toss left. Head. The sky shifted from purple to yellow. Spin. Rock. Spin. Tackle. Head. Fall. Toss right. Toss left. Head. The birds began to chirp. Spin. Rock. Spin. Tackle. Head. Fall. Toss right. Toss left. Head. Once I felt I could complete the sequence near enough to the pace I remembered, or should I say, imagined, the attack happening, I went back into the lighthouse. By now I was sweaty, smelly. I came to the place where the two tall men had attacked me and slid the rock back into its place in the wall. I took a breath. I looked into the empty space where a few hours ago they had stood, and then to the spot closer to the door where Thomas had been, and then to the spot where Neff lay lifeless on the ground. I pictured them in my mind, remembered them, imagined them. The two men lunged. Spin, rock, spin, tackle, head. Fall, toss right, toss left, head. And then I pushed away the two bodies on top of me, the two bodies that were now buried in the brush nearby. I stared into the place where Thomas had stood. I hadn't practiced this part. I pictured him speaking, but what had he said? I couldn't really remember. My mind had been reeling from what I had just done. And I had said something back, but what was it? I had said it around this moment, but what was it? I breathed in and opened my mouth and hoped something coherent would come out.
Get out of here! Run away, Tom! I don't want to see you around here again, and if I do, I'll kill you.
But I knew I wasn't done.
I walked to the two men laying on the floor and slammed the rock into the wood floor. I slammed it twice in different places, making sure I found his head. On the third slam, I remembered that this one had connected with his head. Another few hits, and I moved on to the second man. This is when Tom had left and when I had begun my seizure. So, was that it? Was that all I had to do? Had I just closed a circle? Had I just made it possible for my past self to do what I did? If that was all that closing a circle was, could it really be that hard? The yellow of the sky had shifted to a pale blue as the sun passed the horizon. I used Murphy's large wrench to bolt shut the lighthouse door. I left the lighthouse, I left the clearing, I walked down the thin gravel path to the Artscape Gibraltar Point building. I came to the shore of the lake and washed my hands and face, and then walked along the water and the rocky shore. Now was the sun's light bouncing off the waves. In the distance, a runner was jogging towards me. My insides twisted. I looked down at my dirty, sweaty body. Had I cleaned all the blood? I didn't know where to look as they got closer. What was the most natural thing to do? Look at my feet? Look into their eyes? Into the sun? The runner was a woman out for her dawn jog. She connected eyes with me as I passed her and she smiled. Smiled as if she didn't have a care in the world. Smiled as if she wasn't looking into the eyes of someone who had just did what I did. I walked through the manicured lawns and back to the ferry terminal, where I sat on a bench and waited for the next ride. Tom and I had stood right here a lifetime ago. When I got home, I wanted to shower. I wanted to change my clothes, even like change my skin, if that makes sense. But the moment I sat on my couch, my eyes started to close. I thought that my next move had to be quick. The bodies would be found. The police would come for me eventually. There had been a moment in the lighthouse with Neff when I had felt like I had found the answers and a person who would be able to teach me, share with me what was going on. Tell me more about my dad. And I thought that that was my answer. My dad. It all seemed to lead back to him.
Look me in.
You can follow this story on Instagram and Twitter with @RLAseries. Please consider visiting patreon.com/RLAseries to support the show and reviewing it on your favorite podcast app. Thank you for listening.
Has been brought to you by the Sonar Network.
Sonar!
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.